Chapter 16. Jates and Tutula had been conferring about something, heads close together in a heated argument, and their Z-phone speakers shut off. When Tutula grabbed the front of Jates's uniform top and shook him, Perkins had enough. "Knock it off, you two. Mind telling me what's going on?" Tutula cast her eyes away in a guilty gesture, so Jates straightened in his chair. "Colonel, with the help of Arlon Dahl, we have penetrated the outer layer of the base's computers." "Outstanding," Perkins grinned. "Good work."
"It is nothing, really," Tutula shrugged. "They made almost no attempt at information security, except for details of their current research project. The security of that system is very robust. We will not be able to gain access from here."
"What's the problem, then? You weren't detected?"
"No, we have not been detected. As I said, the base is not concerned about external security. At the base were 11 security personnel and 28 civilian researchers. All the researchers were evacuated 18 days ago. The 11 guards have one dropship."
Perkins considered that. "Okay. A small contingent, lightly armed, and they don't know about us, right?"
"Correct. It is unlikely."
"Tutula, this will go a lot faster if you get to the point and tell me what was worth you two arguing about." Tutula took a breath and looked at Jates, who shook his head. She ignored him.
"Colonel, perhaps you should sit down."
"Oh, shit," Emily told herself as she lowered into a seat on the somewhat flimsy folding chair in the tent that was the group's headquarters on Camp Alpha. The trip down to the surface had been filled equally with tension and boredom, and they now had the dropships covered with stealth netting, tents set up for everyone, and she had a team trying to hack into the Krystang computers. She would not have risked doing that, except Arlon Dahl had assured her that his handheld computer was more powerful than any type of Krystang system. "Go ahead. Give me the bad news."
"In addition to this planet being a military training site, as you know, it was, and is also, a research base. Even before your military units cycled through this world, the warrior caste brought humans here to study."
Jates urgently shot a warning look at Tutula, which she also ignored.
"To study, and to experiment on. Colonel, this will not be easy to hear."
She related the facts of human civilians being kidnapped from Earth and used for horrible tests of bioweapons, genetically engineered pathogens intended to be used against Earth. Thousands of human subjects had died on Camp Alpha, half a world away from the blissfully ignorant human expeditionary force who had eagerly been training to serve their lizard masters.
"These experiments,"
Perkins asked in a voice flattened into calm from shock. It sounded to her like her own voice was coming from far away.
"How far have they advanced?" "Those experiments were terminated shortly after the wormhole access to your homeworld was shut off. No further supply of test subjects could be brought here from Earth, and the White Wind Clan fell into serious financial trouble when they lost access to Earth. Colonel, I am sorry to tell you that, before the wormhole shut down,
the experiments had proceeded far enough that a supply of that original bioweapon was shipped to your planet to be used against your people in case of rebellion.
The pathogen was still in development, but—"
Tutula tapped the display.
"The report stated it was considered effective enough to kill much of the human population, if needed,"
she added quietly. Emily sat in stunned silence. When Tutula opened her mouth to speak, she raised a hand to stop the alien, unable to process any more information right then. The two Verdcris sat quietly, fully understanding the impact of what they had found.
"Tell me," the human asked when she was able to speak. "When the Krystang at Earth learned the wormhole had gone dormant and they were trapped there, what would have been their reaction?"
"We are not Krystang," Tutula reminded gently.
"So any guess we make—"
"They would have shit their pants," Jates stated. "Tutula, Colonel Perkins is a soldier. She needs to know the truth and not some happy stories," he chided his companion. "Colonel, your guess is as good as ours, but I am sure you fear the worst. The warrior caste would have panicked at first, then seized the opportunity to make the best of their dilemma by making the worst for your people.
With access to effective bioweapons, they could have reduced the human population to a manageable number that posed less of an obstacle to the warrior caste exploitation of your world than enslaved the rest.
A manageable number? Perkins whispered in horror. We don't know anything, Tutula cautioned. We don't. Colonel, you should not.
Thank you, Perkins said robotically, so overwhelmed by emotion that at the moment she felt nothing. Do not tell anyone, especially my team, about the bioweapon sent to Earth. They do not need to know. Not yet. She would need to tell the Mavericks what she just learned, because they would find out when she informed UNFHQ on Paradise, if she ever made contact with Paradise. I assume all human test subjects here were killed? That prompted another meaningful look between the Verdcris. Tutula spoke first.
Those test subjects from Earth were all killed when the experiments were ended, yes.
The current problem is that there is another set of experiments ongoing, using human former soldiers who call themselves Keepers?
She checked the translation.
Keepers? Son of a bitch, Perkins exclaimed. Those stupid—
She clenched her fists. Fuming at the stupidity of that misguided bunch was not accomplishing anything. Sorry. Yes, I know about these keepers of the faith, as they call themselves. Please, Tutula, continue.
The current experiments are intended not for use against humans, but to use humans as disease carriers, to kill Ruhar.
The plan is to infect a group of these keepers with a pathogen that uses human DNA to create a binary prion agent.
She saw the lack of understanding in Perkins's eyes.
It is a very sophisticated technique. These prion precursors will remain dormant in an infected human for a specified period. The experiment aimed at a dormancy period of 3 months. During that time, humans could infect others with the precursors, but victims would not display any symptoms. In humans, the binary agents would begin combining into a lethal pathogen in 3 months, but in Ruhar, the latency period would be around 2 months. Ruhar could also infect other Ruhar, so the human carriers are only needed to get the infection started and to provide a cover story, so the Ruhar will think the pathogen is a natural mutation in humans and not a bio-warfare attack that is, as you know, banned by the rules of this war.
Perkins was stunned. The pathogen could leap from human hosts into Ruhar before infected humans are showing any symptoms of illness?
Yes.
Tutula looked guilty, though she had nothing to do with the project.
As I said, this is very sophisticated and advanced biotechnology. The aim of the research is to produce an agent that appears to be a naturally occurring mutation in humans, a mutation that has evolved an ability to cross into Ruhar. Colonel, because human carriers would not know they were infected, they could infect many Ruhar they come into contact with. By the time the Ruhar are showing symptoms, it will be too late. 2 months is long enough for infected Ruhar to travel to other worlds. This pathogen could spread far beyond the planet you call Paradise.
Oh, shit. Blood drained from Emily's face. This will all get blamed on humans. The two Verdcris showed Perkins the data they had skimmed off the unsecure computer at the Kristang base, which, frustratingly, did not contain critical details about the pathogen that was intended for an attack on Paradise. To assess the nature of the threat and to prepare any possible countermeasures, they needed the research data that was locked up behind a secure firewall. But Ernt Dahl was not optimistic about his little computer breaking that firewall.
Colonel,
the Jirapta announced after running a subroutine he thought had the best chance of penetrating the firewall.
The attempt was a failure. I am sorry. My system was not designed to penetrate a well-designed firewall.
Is there any other way to get in remotely?
Not that I know of.
Ernt shook his antennas.
We must be extremely careful. If an intrusion is detected, I expect the research system is designed to erase all of its data. I will work with the cadets who have studied what you call cyber security. I must warn you, I am not hopeful.
Then our best hope may be for a Ruhar ship coming to rescue us, They might have experts who can break into that system, Perkins speculated.
Excuse me, Colonel, but I believe that is not true, Tutula said stiffly. Arrival of an enemy warship would surely trigger the guards at the base to erase all the research data. The system may even be programmed to erase itself if an enemy ship enters this star system.
Damn it, Perkins chided herself. You're right. You're right, Tutula. Thank you for reminding me. We need to get that data and any biological samples stored at that base while the guards here are unaware of our presence. We need a plan to do that if we can't access that research data remotely. We were able to get schematics of the base layout. However, the base has been expanded repeatedly and many security features are also behind the firewall, Jates warned. We could encounter nasty surprises in any assault.
Understood. There is another problem I have to consider.
She looked first to Tutula, then Jates. I have a dilemma, Perkins explained. If I tell the Ruhar this bioweapon technology exists, they could very well quarantine the human population of Paradise to protect the Ruhar.
A quarantine is not your real concern, Jates said as he sat back in his chair.
It is not? Tutula asked.
No. Jates appraised Perkins with a cool eye. If the Ruhar fear humans could be carrying an undetectable lethal pathogen, they may take action to remove the threat. Extreme action.
The Ruhar are not Kristang, Tutula protested.
They are also not stupid, nor soft, Jates concluded. When pressed to protect themselves, they have a will of iron. That is why the Kristang have repeatedly suffered defeats to the Ruhar, despite the warrior caste focusing their entire society and economy on war. Humans are still viewed by most Ruhar as conquered and rather pathetic former enemies, despite all your team has done for them, Colonel Perkins. Gratitude has an expiration date. Fear does not. If the Ruhar federal government believes humans on Paradise pose a real threat to Ruhar society on multiple worlds, they will not hesitate to act against a species that is already unpopular. Besides, I do not think you have a dilemma at all, for you do not have a choice about whether to inform the Ruhar.
Why?
Perkins's eyes narrowed.
If we destroy this research base and all its materials and data, the pathogen will not pose a threat to Paradise.
I believe the human expression is, that ship has sailed.
That expression is particularly appropriate in this situation, Jates announced without humor.
Colonel, from the data Arlen Dahl was able to extract, we learned that a Kristang transport ship departed this world 18 days ago, carrying the bioweapon and a group of keepers who will be infected without their knowledge. That ship, he paused as Perkins felt a sinking feeling, is on its way to Paradise right now.
The Kristang might have killed everyone on Earth?
Shauna asked as tears rolled freely down her cheeks. Perkins had told her team about the bioweapon threat to Earth before she explained the need for a physical assault on the Kristang research base to counter another and more current bioweapon threat.
Hey, darling, we already knew that could be true, Jesse said quietly as he held Shauna's shoulders tightly.
His own face was a mask of anger, but his eyes were moist, and he didn't care if anyone saw.
Yes, but now we know that was their plan all along.
Shauna balled up her fists.
They build a bioweapon, then they shut down the wormhole so they can do whatever they want to Earth without Max Hulks or Rindaloo enforcing their stupid rules. By the time the Kristang open the wormhole again, humans will be extinct and no one will care.
Whoa, Dave gasped.
You think the lizard shut down that wormhole?
Shauna, I do not think that is true, Irene declared.
Word at UNEF HQ was the lizards were totally surprised and freaked out when the wormhole to Earth shut down. They didn't expect that to happen. Hell, if the Kristang can control elder wormholes, they would use that ability for something more important than our little planet.
Maybe they didn't shut down the wormhole, Shauna snapped at her friend.
Maybe they just... You just somehow anticipated that wormhole was going to shut down and they planned for it. It doesn't matter. The lizards have control of Earth. They have a bioweapon, and no one can stop them from doing whatever they want.
All right, Perkins appealed for calm. Jared, I hate the goddamned lizards as much as anyone. But right now we need to focus. We have a job to do.
What's that, ma'am? Jesse asked, startled out of his dark thoughts.
A dumbfuck group of keepers are on their way to paradise, and we have no way to stop them. But on this planet at the research base, is data and materials the Ruhar could use to create a cure or a vaccine or some way to protect against this bioweapon. We need to retrieve that data and hold it until a friendly ship arrives to pick us up.
We can, she thought for a moment.
Yeah, we can, we should, load the data into a drone that will respond only to a Ruhar or allied ship in case a Krestang ship gets here first and wipes us out,
Perkins noted, thinking it strange that the prospect of her own impending death was so relatively unimportant. She felt no fear for herself. Shauna wiped away tears with the back of her hands.
Ma'am, I am in. Point me at that base, and no goddamn lizard is going to keep me from getting that data.
Perkins accepted Shauna's statement with a grim nod.
Tutula, Jates, what about you?
Attacking that base would be taking direct action against your own species. I know the warrior caste are not your people, but...
Colonel Perkins.
Jates thumped the console with a fist, hard enough to shake the tough equipment.
Taking direct action, taking the fight right to the warrior caste, is the reason why we are out here. If needed, Tutula and I will hit that base by ourselves.
That won't be necessary, Irene assured the two Verdgris. Ma'am, we've got plenty of anger and determination. What we need is a plan. We can't take any Ruhar with us on the assault. There's too much risk of infection, even if we stay buttoned up in skin suits. The Verdgris aren't at risk of getting sick or being carriers, right?
Tutula nodded, so she continued.
Then we have to hit that base with the six of us, two Verdgris, one Giraptor, and a couple dropships. We need a plan, and we first need to know the opposition.
So, she turned to the aliens.
What do we know in terms of tactical intel?
Ma'am? Dave asked with a sideways glance at the other four Mavericks huddled around a console and reviewing a schematic of the enemy base.
A word?
Perkins nodded and waved the sergeant to where she was in a cabin seat working on her tablet.
What is it?
Dave lowered his voice.
We know this planet was used to research and test bioweapons for use against humans on Earth.
Perkins cleared her throat that had become constricted by the thought of unimaginable horrors afflicting the population of her home planet. Her original home planet, she reminded herself bitterly. Earth was lost forever to her now, whether humans still lived there or not. Paradise was her home world now.
Yes. My question is...
He ran a finger on the armrest of the chair next to Perkins and showed her a fingertip stained yellow with fine dust that blew in whenever the dropship's doors were open.
We're all breathing this air. Could the bioweapon they plan to use on Earth be loose here?
God damn it,
Perkins swore, keeping her voice low.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, I didn't either until a minute ago. We know the X-Force didn't get infected while we were here, so the lizards must have kept the weapon contained before the Force shipped out to Paradise, but after that? The lizards must have tested the effectiveness of air dispersal at some point. In that case,
he looked at his dust-covered fingertip,
we could all be exposed and infected.
Shit.
Colonel, Dave shot a guilty glance forward, where the only other four humans on the planet were struggling with their own problems.
If we have been exposed to that bioweapon, we need to move up the assault schedule. We need to go before the six of us become combat ineffective, and that could be real soon.
Chaika, this is why the United States Army in its infinite wisdom has sergeants.
Ma'am?
To remind dumbass senior officers like me of practical considerations that I should have thought of. I've had my head in the clouds worrying about goddamn policy, like how UNEF can keep the Ruhar from enforcing extreme measures against us on Paradise to protect their own furry little asses. You just reminded me that I need to focus right here, right now, or there won't be a future for humans or Ruhar.
Listen, Chaika, she whispered. Talk with Dahl or Jates. See if they found any details about the bioweapon the lizards brought to Earth. I've been so worried about this new weapon I forgot about the earlier threat. Maybe they recovered enough data for Ruhar medical scanners, she nodded toward a hard-cased medical pack attached to the cabin wall, to detect whether we have been exposed or not.
The tests were inconclusive, the Ruhar cadet announced with a frightened expression.
What are the results? Perkins demanded.
You have to understand I'm not a doctor. I am only in my second year at the academy, the cadet protested. This device, this scanner, is also not programmed for human physiology, and I might have adjusted it incorrectly. It could be wrong, or it...
What are the results? Perkins asked in a softer tone.
I understand you are doing your best under difficult circumstances. Still, I need information on which to make decisions. Please tell me what the device indicates.
She thought that was easier than asking a young Ruhar, barely into medical studies, to render her own opinion.
The scanner has detected antibodies in the blood of all six of you. It is very likely that you have all been exposed to the bioweapon that was developed for use against humans on your homeworld, on Earth.
Oh, shit, Irene groaned.
Sergeant Chaika's right, Colonel. We need to go ASAP while we can still fly. And fight.
Hold on, Strebich. Perkins held up a hand to halt the frenzied conversation that had sprung up around her.
I don't remember a lot from the biology course I took in college, but I do know that on Earth we use two types of viruses as vaccines. A live virus that has been weakened,
how that worked she had no idea,
and a dead virus, a virus that has been killed. A dead virus can't harm you, but it does provoke your immune system to create antibodies somehow, so if you were ever infected with the real virus, your immune system recognizes the threat and already knows how to kill it.
Did I get that right?
Correct,
the Ruhar cadet agreed, slightly embarrassed for the primitive humans. The crude process of using actual viruses to create vaccines was something she learned about in her medical history class. That technique had not been used by the Ruhar for thousands of years, yet humans still relied on low-tech ancient technology.
Tell me this. Is it possible the pathogen we've been exposed to is dead?
It must have been years since the Kristang dispersed it in the air here. All that time it has been exposed to air, rainwater, heat, cold, ultraviolet radiation from the star, right? Maybe our immune systems were exposed to dead remnants of the bioweapon.
That is possible, yes,
the cadet said slowly, then lifted her head as she warmed to the idea.
I was only given a brief overview of human physiology, but I believe your immunity cells react to proteins on the outer coating of a virus phage. Does that make sense?
Perkins looked to her team for help, but none of them had any idea. Derek tilted his head and frowned.
That sounds about right. I saw something like that on the Discovery Channel.
He grinned sheepishly.
Good.
Yeah, Perkins agreed.
If that is true, then it is possible.
The cadet smiled.
No, it is likely that your antibodies are a reaction to exposure to the dead pathogen. Colonel Perkins, I very much doubt that a relatively crude bioweapon like the one described in the files we found could survive exposure to the elements on this planet for such a long time.
Good. Perkins breathed a sigh of relief.
I do not like the idea of dying of a horrible disease on this rock.
We still have to proceed as if we are infected because we can't take the chance. The incubation period of that original bioweapon has a couple weeks, right?
Yes, according to the data recovered.
The cadet acknowledged with a pained stare down at her display.
Colonel, please consider that even if you are infected, you might have been exposed to an early, less effective form of the pathogen, or the pathogen may be degraded by exposure here, in which case there may be a longer incubation period.
Yes, or the data we recovered might not have contained details of the final, more effective pathogen. I can't take the risk we could all get very sick soon before we can attack that base and get the research data we need.
Thank you, Cadet.
Perkins cut off further discussion. Her throat had been feeling sore for the past 3 days, and it felt worse that morning. She remembered her throat being sore the last time she was on Camp Alpha. Was it just the irritating, burnt-tasting dust that covered everything? Or was she infected and on the verge of a full-blown fatal disease? Perkins put Arlon Dahl and a team of Ruhar cadets on the task of hacking into the research files of the Kristang base, hoping they could extract data detailing the pathogen's chemical signatures, life cycle,
test results, and possible antigens. The next morning, she walked to the dropship that was being used for the hacking effort, just as Nert walked down the open side ramp. The Ruhar cadet waved to her, then bent backwards and forwards with a grimace.
"Are you well, cadet?" Perkins asked.
"Yes, Colonel Perkins. My back is sore from sitting at the console for too long. The team is working very hard,"
he assured her.
"We worked all night."
"Any results?"
"No. Their security around the lab computer is very strong. Arlon Dahl says it is airtight."
"We can't access the data remotely?"
Nert looked distractedly at the tablet in one hand.
"We would have better luck playing pick-up sticks with our butt cheeks."
Despite the seriousness of the situation, she had to smile.
"Nert, is that another colorful expression you learned from the 3rd Infantry?"
"No."
He turned toward her, his skin under the light fur turning a darker shade of pink.
"I heard that from Shauna, that is, Sergeant Jarrett. Is it a bad thing to say?"
"No. It is only discouraging to hear."
"The team is continuing to work on the problem,"
Nert forced a smile.
"But they're not optimistic, are they?"
"No, Colonel, they are not. I must be truthful. There has been no progress for the past 7 hours. The remaining methods we could use to access the data remotely pose a serious risk of our cyber attack being detected. I am sorry."
"Don't be sorry, cadet. You and the team have endured harsh conditions and performed far beyond expectations. It looks like..."
She looked off to the horizon, far beyond which lay the Kristang base.
"We'll have to do this the hard way."
"There is no way to extract that data remotely?" Perkins requested confirmation of the gloomy news Nert had brought to her.
"I am sorry, no. Perhaps if we had a team of experts from our data security division, but..."
Ernt waved a claw to encompass the tired group around him.
"They are Ruhar cadets, and I am not a computer expert."
"You did your best, that's all I can ask.
Damn it. If we go in and the lizards spot us before we can get to the data core, they could erase the memory and we'd lose everything, all their records." She tugged the hair on the back of her head in frustration.
"The research computer may be programmed to erase itself in the event of an attack on the base."
She turned her attention to the two Verdkris.
"What do we know about this research base?"
"Not enough," Tutula pointed to her display. "We have the original schematics of the compound, back when the Kristang built it to study the star here and its effects on the planet. They were hoping to understand how the Elder Weapon created a focused solar flare that cooked this world."
She grinned and bounced her eyeballs up and down in the Verdkris equivalent of an eye roll.
"They had no chance of understanding technology on that level. The base has been expanded and modified over the years, especially the research facilities, and we do not have access to those records other than very basic information."
"Very well." Perkins unfolded a chair and sat down. "Show me what we do know."
"What's the plan, ma'am?"
Shauna asked, looking up from her tablet. All eyes turned to the human commander, with the two Verdkris in particular waiting intently to hear what the primitive being would say. Perkins took a breath, steadying herself.
"I say we go in hot, kill everyone, take the data, and bug out quick."
She looked to Irene, then Derek, then the two Verdkris pilots.
"If it moves and it's not us, kill it. I don't care about collateral damage to the base buildings as long as you don't hit the main research complex."
"What about your keeper people?"
Tutula asked, pronouncing keeper slowly.
"We believe there are still a group of humans at the base."
"Don't fire on them deliberately."
Perkins's hard expression softened slightly.
"But don't take any risk either. If there's a..."
She almost said lizard.
"If there's an enemy shooting at us and he's surrounded by keepers, take them all out."
"You are willing to sacrifice your own people to accomplish the mission?"
Tutula's eyes narrowed as she waited for Perkins's answer.
"As far as I'm concerned, those keepers have pretty much fucked themselves."
Perkins spat on the dusty ground.
"I'm not risking a single one of our lives for them. You have a problem with that?"
She stared Tutula straight in the eye.
"No, Colonel Perkins."
Tutula's lips twitched in what was intended as a smile,
Your mission focus is admirable. My people are not cruel like the Kristang you have encountered in the past, but we are also not soft. We do not believe in half measures.
A shadow fell across her expression, and she added in a low voice,
With our small numbers against those of the warrior caste who have stolen and perverted our culture, we cannot afford to be sentimental.
Perkins nodded. There are less than 24 keepers at that base, if we can believe the outdated info we retrieved. Over 100,000 humans are on Paradise, and millions of Ruhar. We are not putting all those lives at risk just to possibly rescue a small number of keepers. When they removed the UNEF insignia from their uniforms, they should have gotten a big chicken dinner. Perkins forgot the aliens would not understand the slang for bad conduct discharge. I don't hate the keepers. Most of them are too stupid to know what they're doing. But they got themselves into this mess, and now their mess is threatening all the lives on Paradise and maybe beyond. Ma'am, Shauna's face had a strained, uncomfortable expression. What will we do if we take out the enemy and there are keepers still alive? We can't take them with us, Perkins noted. We have to assume they're all infected and we have to minimize our exposure. That means our suits stay buttoned up the whole time and we follow full decontamination procedures on the egress. We can't bring infected keepers with us. She continued to use the term keepers because if she called them humans or people, it would be more difficult to ignore their situation. If we accomplish the mission and some keepers survive, their best bet is to remain in place. She almost used derogatory slang in front of the Verdgris. The Kristang must have food for the keepers there. We certainly don't have enough food with us to feed that number of people. They can remain at the base. Though Shauna still looked uncomfortable, her arms across her chest and shoulders slumped forward, curled into herself, she nodded briefly.
We have to tell them about the bioweapon program. They deserve to know the truth.
Dave snorted.
Come on, Shauna. Those sleepers have had the truth staring them in the face for years, and they don't see it because they don't want to see it. What makes you think that us telling them the Kristang have been using them as lab rats will change their mind?
Hey, chill, Ski, Jesse replied in defense of his girlfriend, putting an arm around Shauna's shoulders to show he understood her feelings on the subject. Like the Colonel said, some of them are just too dumb to know what they're doing. Or they're gullible and followed the wrong people. Look at Eric Koblenz. Yeah, the guy was a grade-A asshole, but I don't think he would do anything to kill people on Paradise. His own people.
Okay, Pone, yeah. Eric was too dumb to know what he's doing, Dave agreed.
We should tell them, Irene added. If they don't believe us now, they will when they all start dying in a couple months.
Hell. Jesse kicked the dusty ground with the toe of a boot.
What freaking mess. How did we get such bad karma?
Bad? Perkins pretended to be surprised.
Coulter, this is good karma in disguise. If our star carrier hadn't gotten blown up, we would never have known about the threat to Paradise, and we would not now have this marvelous opportunity to shine.
Jesse tilted his head at their commanding officer.
You do know what opportunity means in the military, right, ma'am?
I do, Coulter, and my ass will be on the line right beside you.
Tutula clapped her hands, startling the humans.
I see an opportunity for direct action against the warrior caste who have oppressed my people for millennia. When do we start, Colonel Perkins?
Now. Prep a dropship. The dropship, with Tutula and Derek flying the outbound leg and Irene acting as relief pilot, followed a medium, then low-altitude stealth flight profile until it was within 600 kilometers of the base, where the ship's sensors picked up the faintest traces of backscatter from the network of active sensors surrounding the base. At that point, with risk of detection approaching an unacceptable 3%, Derek gently turned 180 degrees, reduced speed, and gradually lost altitude while the others prepped the package. A minute later, a door opened under the dropship's tail, and a stream of stealthy foam-covered balls fell out, tumbling smoothly as they fell away. The dropship gradually increased power and climbed, while the crew anxiously monitored extremely faint data feeds from the cluster of more than 36 sensor drones they had ejected. When each drone fell to 4,000 feet above the ground,
an invisible nanofiber parachute deployed, spreading wide and momentarily bringing its payload almost to a halt in midair. The foam coating dissolved, and the drone unfolded itself, sprouting wings that swept back to allow the hummingbird-sized drone to build airspeed. Each drone checked in with its fellows by line-of-sight laserlink, and only one drone out of the 38 was found to be operating at less than the optimal level. As that drone was not needed, it self-destructed with the consent of its flock, sending particles no larger than a fingernail to rain softly down and bury into the dusty ground. Flying slowly to conserve fuel and avoiding tripping enemy motion sensors by artificially disturbing the air, the flock of drones approached the base, encircling it. Several times a drone had to go into hover mode as it was swept by an active sensor pulse. The risk was that the Kristang might have set their air cover sensors on an ultra-sensitive mode, for the planet had no flying animal life, and therefore anything moving in a way not detected by the prevailing winds had to be a threat. One drone, pinned in place by an active sensor pulse that came back to sweep over it three times, self-destructed to avoid detection, so no alarm was raised at the base. None of the drones risked overflying the site, but as the base was in a mountain valley, no overflight was needed. One by one, the drones set down just inside the lines of ridges and foothills, selecting locations where they had line of sight to the base below on the valley floor. Each drone focused its own passive sensors on a different area of the base, switching focus in a pre-programmed, coordinated fashion to provide a three-dimensional map of the target.
Ah, damn it!
Dave threw up his hands as he saw the recently assembled composite image of the Kristang research base. His frustration was not because of the base's defenses, for those appeared to be minimal. There were only two anti-aircraft Maser batteries, and the Mavericks could deal with those before the assault. The single dropship assigned to the base was also not a problem. It was out of its hardened underground bunker with one of the engines laying exposed on the ground in pieces. As Dave watched, two Kristang were having an animated argument about the disassembled engine, shouting something at each other. The sensors were too far away to pick up the lizard's words, and Dave didn't give a rat's ass what two murderous assholes were saying anyway. What he did care about was on the other side of the base in a separate compound surrounded by a double fence. What he saw there made him angry. A group of a half-dozen humans standing around in the morning sunlight. Several others walked between buildings in the compound, and from the size of the buildings, Dave guessed there might be as many as 50 humans housed there. He zoomed in the image to the point where, despite the super high-tech image stabilization and enhancement gear of the sensors, he still had to blink to understand what the slightly fuzzy view was showing him. Then he understood, for he had seen that same image many times before in his military career. The rectangular areas of flattened dirt were where tents had been set up, tents or some other type of temporary shelter. People had walked over the flattened ground after the tents had been removed, but the heavy tracks leading to where the tents had been, he knew they had been occupied at some point. Probably the compound recently had held many more humans, perhaps double or triple the number that could be housed in the permanent buildings. Interesting, he muttered. Then,
Colonel, ma'am, we got a problem.
What is it, Chaika?
Keepers, he nearly spat with disgust.
From the enhanced image, he could see the people standing around in the sunlight were wearing military uniforms, so they had to be keepers. There are at least a dozen of those shitheads from what I've seen. Could be more still in those buildings.
That's the control group, then.
Perkins looked at Ernt Dahl. Control group? She looked at the Giraptha, who was shifting his rear pair of legs nervously. Perkins explained. Arlon Dahl found information that one group of keepers here was used as a control group. They were not infected, while other groups were infected with different versions of the pathogen. If a test group became sick unexpectedly but the control group also got sick, the Kristang would know the cause was some environmental factor and not the experimental pathogen. Until now, we did not know whether any of the control group was still alive, because the records Dahl could access stopped updating when the last group of researchers left this planet. We do know all the Ruhar they brought here are dead. They used the Ruhar control group for the final test.
Well, I wonder why that group of keepers is still alive.
Jesse rubbed the back of his neck.
I mean, why bother? You can see from that double-layer fence the lizards here think those keepers are a security risk.
Insurance? Shauna guessed. In case something goes wrong with the op on Paradise, or in case they decide to use the pathogen on another Ruhar planet, maybe.
Dave tapped the display again.
Ma'am, I just thought of something.
That control group. They've been here a long time, right?
Likely they came here soon after they left Paradise, why?
If we've been exposed to the original bioweapon by breathing the air here, the one the lizards planned to use on Earth, then those keepers must have been exposed also.
Damn, Jesse slapped Dave on the back. You're right, man. They're still alive, so we must have been exposed only to a dead virus. We're good.
Not necessarily, Perkins stated with a frown, and Dave nodded agreement. The keepers may have been given a vaccine against the original bioweapon.
Yeah.
And in that case, Dave tapped the display. The vaccine must be in that base somewhere. Would a vaccine do us any good now that we've already been exposed?
I don't know, Perkins admitted.
Colonel Perkins,
Ernt Dahl crossed his forearms.
I am not an expert on biological weapons, but I doubt the Kristang would have vaccinated or treated the humans here against another pathogen. Because humans on Paradise have not been exposed to the original pathogen, giving the control group here a vaccine or post-infection treatment would alter their immune response from the baseline and reduce their usefulness as a true control group.
Oh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Perkins's mouth was a flat line across her face. Unless the Kristang didn't have a choice about it, since they had contaminated this whole planet already.
Chaika, good thinking. We'll look for a treatment or something when we get inside that base.
Shit. That original bioweapon is another damn good reason why we need to take that base soon.
Not just to protect ourselves, Dave said, knowing what she was thinking.
No. If there is a vaccine or treatment in there somewhere, we need it. If we ever get to Earth and the lizards there haven't already used the bioweapon against our people, we need a countermeasure.
Can we do it? Bottom line.
Perkins stood with her arms crossed after reviewing the data gathered by the sensors.
Yes. Tutula's confidence was absolute. Their air defenses are minimal.
She looked to Ernt Dahl for confirmation. The beetle raised its antenna in a sort of shrug.
I am not an expert on anti-aircraft systems. I am not familiar with the subject at all. My training was for fleet service, he admitted.
Their air defenses are weak and degraded.
Tutula enhanced the display image, highlighting two areas.
These are defensive maser turrets. I suspect one of them is offline and has been that way for a long time.
How do you know that? Perkins asked, leaning forward to get a better view.
These turrets require regular maintenance and test firing after components are replaced. The turret to the south has vehicle tracks leading from the base and footprints around the site. Vehicle tracks at the north side have been obscured by blowing sand and there are no footprints. Also, this hatch.
She zoomed in the view so powerfully that the image became fuzzy and shook slightly.
It is open. It should be closed. I think someone tried to fix a mechanical failure in that turret and gave up. With the warrior caste,
she avoided using the word Kristang,
scheduled to abandon this planet, they would not expend much effort to maintain facilities here.
Okay, I see that. That is a hell of a risk to take with our aircraft space, based on a lack of footprints and one open hatch.
That is not all, Colonel Perkins. As I said, the masers would be test-fired after components have been replaced. You can see here on the hills to the south scorch marks where maser beams struck. Those marks are still dark, indicating that turret was fired recently, and the maser fire must have come from the southern turret because they would not have risked firing over the base. There are no scorch marks on hills to the north. We can't absolutely verify condition of the northern turret because that data is behind their secure firewall.
Dahl's antenna waved in agreement with that statement.
So we need to trust our own eyes.
All right, Strebich, Bonsu, do you agree?
Yes, ma'am, Irene nodded.
The three of us covered this last night. It's doable.
Those maser turrets are armored, Perkins observed skeptically.
Your dropships aren't.
The turrets are armored, plus they have an energy shield, Irene added with a frown.
And you're right, our ships are vulnerable. But we have an ace in the hole.
part of the weapons load we brought down from the toaster are anti-AA missiles, kind of like the HARM system our Navy and Air Forces use. Those seed systems home in on active sensors, right? Perkins noted. Not on the anti-air weapon itself. The Kristang must use a distributed sensor network.
They do. Irene groaned inwardly, wanting to avoid a long session of educating their commander about the finer points of suppression of enemy air defenses.
These Ruhar missiles are smart. They know Kristang anti-air masers use a look-look-shoot pattern. Two low-powered beam bursts to track and confirm the target lock, followed by the kill shot. Each of the Ruhar HARMs deploys 28 submunitions that look for maser backscatter. Once they pinpoint the maser's location, they kill it. Some of the submunitions fire their own maser countermeasures to scramble the enemy's targeting data, while the others home in and kill the turret.
Ma'am, in this case we have an advantage. We already know exactly where that turret is. We plan to launch our anti-AA missiles before we come over the ridgeline. We saturate their defenses, knock them out before exposing ourselves.
The base doesn't have any missile batteries?
No. There is a site here to the west where they plan to install missiles. You can see where they bulldozed the site and installed part of this concrete pad here.
On the display, Irene pointed to a broken concrete tile half covered with drifting sand.
They stopped work on it. We know there are not any underground sensor feeds to that area.
What about manpats? Dave asked, peering over Perkins' shoulder.
Manpat?
Dahl asked, confused. He tapped his right ear.
My translator did not understand that reference.
Man-portable air defense, Dave explained, miming that he held a missile tube on one shoulder. A shoulder-launched anti-aircraft missile, you know?
Ah, yes.
The Giraptha's antennas bounced up and down.
Our military has such devices, though I have never seen them in action. Our pilots are warned to be very careful about such devices when used by the enemy. They can be deadly, even to our advanced air spacecraft. But,
yeah, we know, Irene forced a smile. Your training is for fleet service.
Ma'am,
she turned her attention back to Perkins.
Tutula is right. This is doable. Air defenses are not the biggest problem.
That remark drew a raised eyebrow from Perkins, so Irene continued.
Hitting this base is a waste, unless we recover data and hopefully samples from the research. From what we,
she pointed to Ernst Dahl, have been able to get from hacking in, all that data is housed here in the research complex in the center of the base. We can avoid damage to those buildings, but the defenders could trigger a program to erase all the data, or it might be set to erase automatically in the event that base is attacked.
But you have a plan for that?
Arlan Dahl has a plan, ma'am. The Giraptha raised himself up on his back legs before remembering other species were threatened by that posture, so he settled back down on all four legs.
The data connection between the research complex and the security center where the guards live is an underground cable here. For redundancy, they should have multiple cables. I think the connection is limited to a single cable because they are more concerned about their own people stealing data than about external threats. The cable is not deep. It is part of the original construction, and the plans state it is only...
The translator stumbled awkwardly, as it always did when converting measurements.
3.865 meters deep.
Dahl paused to see if Perkins understood, and she nodded.
Ma'am,
Irene picked up the narrative. We have missiles that can blow a hole deeper than that. A missile can cut the cable so the defenders can't order the research core to erase its data. Other missiles will drop off drones that can orbit the area and jam any backup wireless connection to the research base.
Which leaves only the problem of the research core detecting an attack and erasing itself,
Perkins shook her head.
I am not liking this plan.
We have a plan for that also. Dahl bobbed on his four legs excitedly.
The research core gets data from the base sensor network, also from that single cable. The core may be programmed to erase itself in the event of an interruption in the sensor feed, and you can't take that risk.
Perkins noted the Giraptha had said you rather than we.
While we have been unable to access the research core or the secure network, that cable also carries unsecure data, and there are buffers spaced regularly along the cable. We can hack into those buffers and plant false sensor data, so the research core will not know about our attack until the buffers overflow.
How long does that give us?
2 minutes and 48 seconds,
Dahl flashed a Jarapatha smile which made Perkins shudder as it looked like a spider eating something.
Less than 3 minutes?
That's not much time. Not enough to land a ship and get inside the research base to download the core.
No, Irene agreed. In those 168 seconds, we need to cut the cable, then locate the cut end of the cable that leads to the research complex, and physically tap into it with a transmitter of our own that will keep feeding false sensor data.
She held up a small device that had a hole in it for plugging in a data cable.
That's a mighty tall order, Strebitch. Any way we can get a missile to drop off a drone that can attach to that cable?
We aren't carrying any drones like that, ma'am. And I wouldn't want to trust a drone to dig in a blast crater to find a severed cable. One of us needs to do it.
In 168 seconds, our missiles need to crest the ridge, sever that cable, then a dropship needs to fly there, slow down to land, and a team needs to dig down in a blast crater to find a cable.
Yes. We need to knock out air defenses first.
Irene gritted her teeth.
I assume you have a plan to do all this?
Yes, Colonel.
You want to see our assault plan?
Hell yes. Run through it for me.